So today is July 22nd, 208. So we continue to study the knob tooth of suffering. And last time we studied the sixth one, associated with people who you dislike or is painful, or something that you dislike is also causing some kind of affliction, painful inside ourselves. External and internally. And so today we will continue on that, and we will study the seventh kind of suffering is unable to satisfy the things that you want or the thing that you need is also a suffering. So for example, if we always want to buy a bicycle, it's so bad, right? Something that you really like, and you're not unable to obtain it. So as a kid, you cry out to your mom, cry out to your dad, and you know, and find a way. And as a teenager, if you don't have money, what
happened? No car.
You can go around and, you know, try to find a way to get money, right? Yeah. When I was not teenager, I was about still young. You know, I was in it's kind of homeless. Wandering in the train station after the Vietnamese communists took over the country, and we was kid and running around, nowhere to go. So we just go around in the hang around in the train stations and steal, you know, whatever is there, you know, because we was hungry, you know, looking for food, and you know, and whoever, you know, we don't mind to do anything to get some thing that we need, you know, because we never think about any other people, you know, because nobody teaches us to anything. Just even like old lady, you know, if she have something, we just try to, you know, say, can we help you, and then, you know, took away, you know. I saw many kids, I didn't do that, but I saw kids do that, and you know, and the old lady was crying, you know, she was carrying two bags of her personal stuff, and you know, this young man just come and say, oh, you are so new, you weak, you know, you come, and well, can we help you, you know, and then they and they help her, and they just took it away, you know, just do whatever that help them to obtain the things that they need. But if we don't able to do that, obtain whatever we need, and then we feel some kind of painful, right? Suffering, someone is suffering. So doesn't matter whatever we want, more or less, but if we're not able to obtain, then we feel some kind of emotional or some kind of painful inside ourselves, and we try to strive in any way to get it, because we never satisfy. When sometimes we get it just for fun. You know, just a few seconds, and after that we feel bored of it and throw it away. You can see like children, mostly, you know, young children, they really want that, you know, and they cry, and after a few seconds they play, and they get bored, and they need another things. They look and they try to get another things, and they try to go to fight with another children, kid. I saw kids do that a lot, especially if you have children, you know them. You know, they want whatever they want, they have to have it. Otherwise, they cause a lot of trouble. Running around, kick this and that, you know, and children, they don't understand. But even as adults, we also too, you know. Sometimes I was sitting down with the things that I did, and you know, one thing get done, another is coming up, you know. And I never satisfy what we have done, you know. You know, once we got the bathroom done, and I say, oh no, I need to get another things done, you know. And just keep this. And then I sit back, and in my meditation, I see it's endless. The thing that I want to be done. I satisfy one thing, and the next thing. So now I not realize that. I say, you know, whatever. You know, we see the returning why to get it done. But you know, we do a lot of works on Sunday, and this Monday I just relax. I say, if I get this done, I will get another. I want another things done. You know, so I never even myself. So I realized that, and I stopped that. You know, I have to relax. But it's the practice help me to look deeply and see. But if without the practice, without the mindfulness, I can do that. You know, can't stop. You know, imagine those people outside in the world. They just keep one things after another and never satisfy. Because they never have a moment to sit down and in stillness and to reflect of whatever that in our life. So that's why we just like running forever without stopping. Without stopping. So there is a story of a man who is just running. He was riding a horse, and the man said, "Where are you going?" You know, in the book, in the heart of the Buddha teachings, he can tell the story. And say the man say, "Where are you going?" And they say, "The horse is running, not me." And the man say, "Do you know where you're going?" And say, "No, I don't know where I'm going," because the habitual just keep us running, and we don't know where we're running. The same thing, the thing that we want, and we sometimes want, but we don't know what we want. We just keep wanting, just design for one thing after another. So, but if we have the mindfulness practice and we're able to sit down and see what we really want in our life, we have to ask ourselves that question. What do you really want in life? Because the more we want for the external thing, we never satisfy. I found myself that. Even education. I finish one thing, I want to start another thing. In education. But so we have to know where to stop and what kind of need that we need. Because our line is not that long, you know. We have to realize that. Because we never look back and say, how much that time has just passed by. We don't know. We don't realize that. When I sit down, I say, oh man, I right now fast 40, almost 40 already. And it's running so fast each day, you know. One day we get up in the morning, and time run by, and then it's already in the evening, and we haven't get anything done yet. Yes, we haven't get anything done yet. So we have to able to sit down and rest and reflect on what is meaning in our life. What do we want? Or do we just keep running for the things that we want? And the more we want, and then we never satisfy. Never. Unless we have internal happiness. The moment you sit down, and unless you have a moment of joy in stillness, that's where is the long-lasting happiness. That's what you want, I think, everyone of one of them. So if you have a moment of happiness in stillness, then that's, and you can see that, that will not cost you anything, but it's required you to sit down and rest. And you have to find the environment. First, you have to find the right environment. That's why the yogi, they go into the mountain, in a quiet place, at the beginning. And they find a quiet place and sit down and contemplate about their life. Because in that kind of environment, it's easy for us, our minds, to rest. I remember when I was very young, and then we was working on the rice field. And I like it very much because the rice field have a vast space whenever the rice blossom. And you see a lot of flower in the endless space. And once the rice is ripening, and you see all yellow, this rice field. And that kind of moment is remind me back. I feel so much happy in that moment. When I was young, I worked on the rice fields. And it's so quiet, you know, especially in the evening, you sit down and just sit down. And you sit on in the middle of the field. And all around you like rice fields. Either you're very green, sometimes it's very green, you know, when the rice first grow. And it's very green and so fresh in your look. And when the rice blossom, you have different feeling. And once the rice is ripe, you have different feeling. That feeling. But it's very quiet because nobody at that moment, in the evening, everybody came back to home, and you are lonely in the rice field, but you're lonely in happiness. happy in loneliness. You feel that. I feel that when I was young, when I look back. And that nourishes me a lot. It's the same thing that when we go into a quiet place such as mountain, and you see, you look down and you see a lot of space. And that's kind of happiness is in you. Because you don't look for anything like external. You have the space, you have the stillness, you have the quietness in you. That's the moment. That's how the Buddha enjoyed his life. You know? So in India, all the yogi, they do that. Most of you study the sutra on Buddha nature. Buddha nature, sutra, or the yogi, they call Yogacara sutra. And you can see, you can find many stories of the yogi who practice in either in the graveyard or in cemetery or in the forest. And they leave behind everything. They renounce everything. They renounce. Because in Buddhism, there is a movement that most of the yogis, they do that. There's a movement, Samana movement, during the Indian time. So that's, it's kind of revolution. People go into the forest and look for some quietness in themselves. Samana movement. So if you have a chance, you study the Yogacara or Buddha nature, you can see all this kind of story, how the yogi, they enjoy their stillness in a space of, in the environment that is like forest. They enjoy the greenness of the trees and things like that. You have to feel that. The nature nourishes a lot in that. So for example, if you go to Yosemite and you go, me and Fokai, we went backpack hiking, and I enjoyed that very much. We hiked for 17 miles, and it's really nice. We go into like the river and on, you know, a lake, really on the top, and you know, find a rock, big rocks, and you can feel the solidity of the rock. You can feel that, and at that moment you feel so much joy. You don't have to look for anything like external, you know, because for a long hike and you're so tired already, and you're physically tired, and then you say that, oh, you leave everything. You say, oh, I leave everything behind, and the world behind. You feel so much joy in that, and that kind of movement is nourished a lot from your spiritual practice. So that's why I say that what I'm telling you is the environment, how you practice. So that's why mostly most of the monasteries, they draw in the forest. They call, have a tradition, they call forest monasteries in Thailand. Forest monastery. And even in Korea or in Vietnam, mostly the big monasteries, they dwell in the place of forest. Because in that kind of space, it's easy for people's mind when they come. The mind is easy to calm them. They already just come into the environment. They already got healing. They already got some transformation. And they don't need anything. They leave all the needs behind. All the need behind. At that moment, they satisfy with whatever there is. Whatever there is. So the need is being satisfied within. So that's why sometimes we satisfy ourselves in that kind of environment. So as a practitioner, we should find some kind of environment that's a natural healing. Natural healing for our body and our mind. Especially you go to hike, you know, and go to some kind of national park, you have kind of feeling. I think most of us, we experience that. I experienced myself when I was in Yosemite and even Estes Park. I last, when Tay was here, and I went with him. And he also, Tay, he really liked that kind of environment. So after the retreats, he's old, but he's hiking very well. He walks slow, but he everywhere he go, he reach everywhere, and he's like he go into the big boulders and sit there, you know, and by to the waterfall, you know, and you can see you can receive the freshness of the water, you know, because when the water falls down, and refresh the environment, and you feel that's very natural healing. So if we have a lot of stress in our everyday life, I think I suggest that every one of us should, once in a while, you should have do some kind of hiking into the deep forest or into the big park. And there is a lot of boulder, a lot of natural environments, and that help our mind a lot. So that's why the yogi they like that, you know. You know, like that because it's a natural process for the mind to heal itself and the mind to calm down. And that is where the mind going back to itself. See? But if we consider new to live in a city, especially where there's a lot of noise, a lot of hurrying, you know, and now we've been watered by that, but we don't know. Slowly. It permeates into our body and our mind each day, but we don't know. And we so much stress, but we don't know because we don't really live into awaken ourselves into the mindfulness. So in like in Japan, in Korea, you know, all the monasteries, yeah, all the big temple, they in the big mountain. Even in China, I went to in China in 2003. We went to a pilgrimage for a month. And most of the big monastery I visit is all the way so high on the mountain, you know. We have to climb like 1,000 steps in order to reach to that. And it's so peaceful there, a lot of bamboo, a lot of things like that. And when I go there and I learn many things, because the footprint is still there. All the energies of the practitioners, Zen practitioners, still there. But nobody lived there. You know, they have big park like this, like cooked for thousands of people. But now the temple is empty. You know, the temple is there, but nobody is there. You know, because the communists, nobody is there, and I realized the nature of impermanence when I do the pilgrimage. And I see that, you know, 1,000 years ago, like here, you can see the imprints that thousands and thousands of monks and practitioners have been here and practiced. But now it's gone. Nobody. The statue is there, you know, the stupa is there, and the energy is there. And we just sit there and see and let the nature of impermanence permeate ourselves, because we already learned the teachings, and we really witnessed how the impermanent teachings go into ourselves. And when we think of that, and we make our practice more diligently, you see, one day we have to depart, you know, because all the masters have lived here 1,000 years ago, now they're all gone, and we are here. So we are. I ask myself, what can I do? You know, what do I do? How can I practice? You know, to revive the practice. You know, when you there, you ask questions in yourself, and you see the process of impermanence in your body, in your mind, the teaching. And that's when, at that moment, the desire in yourself slowly transform. You can see that. So why, and you ask us, why do I need to desire more things for? What do I need? Is that necessary? You ask yourself, is that necessary? When you buy a shirt, it's cost for $200. And you ask yourself, is that necessary? You have to work out it. You have to spend so much energy out there. And whether you and you have to ask yourself whether I satisfy after I buy this shirt. You can have a momentary happiness. At the moment you feel happy. But after go home, sometimes you be regrets. You say, I work so much hard. And sometimes you get either too small and too big, and you feel regrets, right? You feel regret on that. So when you buy something that costs, you say, it is necessary for my my happiness life, my two-fist peace in me. Necessary that. Then you stop. You hold the thing, and you stop a moment. Stop a moment and look into it. The same thing when we eat something. Because we have a habit that we run, we just put something fast into our mouth or just grab something fast. You never have a moment to look at the things that you are holding. So that's the practice, is to stop a moment and look at it. in that moment, if you do some, if we do something that not really good for our life, and you're able to see it at that moment, like you're able to have some kind of samadhi, concentrations, and some insight there. So that's why vipassana, they, you know, the movement they do slowly, every step. There's a purpose for that. You know, they raise their feet, and they hold a little bit, and they put it out. You know, and every movement, they stop a little, just about a few seconds to see. So that means the energy of mindfulness is arising. Because if sometimes you lose too fast, then you can, the energy of mindfulness is not fast enough to caught up with your habit energy. And then we do something that we cause something that's not necessary to be a cause. So the practice is like, so that's why in Buddhism is concentration, insights, and mindfulness is very important. That is the backbone of Buddhism. But slowly we will be, you know, elaborate to make it clear. But that's the backbone. So concentration is...
I'm sorry, would you repeat? You said concentration,
insight. Insights, and mindfulness.
Mind.
Yeah, that's three, you call three training. Three training. That's the backbone of Buddhism. Every thing we do, we have to, and all other teachings we born out of that. Insight, concentration, and mindfulness. Mindfulness here, we can translate as sila. Sila is the training or precepts, but it's similar meaning. Mindfulness. So the meaning is the precept is to keep yourself awakening. So it's in that way. It's translated as mindfulness. To refrain of whatever you're doing, you know, to slow yourself down. So when we do the pilgrimage, it's really good for us to look at the historical, and if we have some kind of teacher impermanent, we see it, and slowly that kind of teaching is permeate in our body and ourselves. And that's why we slowly realize the nature of impermanence is one with us. So every moment that we're able to draw in the teacher of impermanence, you very easy to solve any problem come to you. Very easy, and easy to let go. Anger. You know, you say, anger is also impermanent. It's calm as an energy. And it's go also as, and it subsides by itself also an energy. You know that. And when we say that, we can see the nature of impermanent nature, or impermanent, of anger, then we can see that. And we say, why do we have to anger? You know, why don't we have to horn? Because it also is come and go, right? So even our desire or our passions, the same. Because you can see, look, sit still and see, you know, desire come and go is very fast. Because that kind of desire is not lasting. It's like momentarily, you know. It's just like come, arise, and fall, and disappear. Same. But whether when the desire comes, whether we have the mindfulness to look into it or not, that is the practice. That needs the practice. That needs the insight to penetrate that moment. So when we have the insight to penetrate that, the desire will be disappear right away. It's like a drop of water, you know, just like. So fragile in nature. So when we meditate into this kind of characteristics here. Yeah, the characteristics or the quality of what is the unsatisfied need that we have in our life. Most of the thing in what we have is sometimes it's not necessary. You look at your closets. Yeah, you look at your closets over here. And you see many clothes is not necessary, and you need to go to offer to goodwill, or you know. So that's why the monastics is very easy life. I never pick any clothes. You know, the same that you can whenever you call me, I just wear the same robe every time. And it's easy. You see, it makes your life simple. Mm-hmm. You know, simple, and that's where Happiness born from symbolessness. You know? You see the Buddha, he have only three robes, he have anything to, no choose, no choice. But he's the most happiest man in the world. So is the solution for us in this our society is to live simple but happy. Simple. Because we have so much and we don't know what we need. Look on the crosses and you like take half an hour for you to choose one clothes. For the party, yeah. When I was a layman, I decided the same thing. You know, different jean, I don't know which jean to wear. You know, I debate with myself, you know, oh, this jean will be, you know, fit for today or not, you know, or whether I wear, you know, the white blouse, you know, or shirt, you know, and it's take like half an hour or 15 minutes, you know, before I go to the shower. So I know that. And since I become an Essex, I wear mostly brown and, you know, like gray, you know, same. You know, yeah. That's why one time I was in college, I wear the same clothes every day, and one girl just asked you, whether you have any clothes? Yeah, you have any clothes? I saw you wear the same clothes every day. I say, oh, I have, but I don't need. Even my counselor, and she called me and said, I saw you wear the same thing every day, whether you have clothes or not. And I say, no, I'm a monk. I have only one color. Whatever clothes I choose, the same color. Same color. And I say, I only have like four or five clothes, so I don't need more. And she cry. Say, I have a lot, but I never satisfy what I have. I look at my closet full of clothes, and my shoes, and my mother also. And she constantly asks for clothes, but I bought for her, but she never satisfied. And I couldn't help her what she wanted. And she cried to me. She cried to me. She said that I have a lot of things, but I never feel happy. I never satisfied with my life. She's a counselor. And I go back to counseling her in Hawaii. I was in Kapi'olani Community College. Yeah, because she lacks the spiritual practice, and she has so a lot of conflicts with her mom. Both of them, they don't know what they want, they don't know what they need, but their need is unsatisfied all the time. And she suffered a lot. And when she said, when she hear me, I say, I only have a few things, but I'm very happy. And she cry, say, I want to be like that. But I can't. She have a good job counseling, but she never happy with her life. And she love her mom so much, but they all, whenever they meet, they have like fight, argue. And whenever she just saw me and then she cry. And I go back to, I help her. Because she don't understand her mom and her mom don't understand. They don't understand each other's need, you know. What they need here is the love and to understand each other. That's what they need, the communications. But they never find a way to do that. Even she's a counselor, you know, a counselor. So I feel, and I learned the lesson. I said that I have a lot of shoes, but I don't know, sometimes I'm not satisfied with what I have with my shoes. I don't know what pair I should wear, you know, for the next day. And endless need. And that's what makes it never happy. But when we're able to sit down, once we're able to really sit down, and just the moment we sit down, we are very happy with ourselves. That's the only thing we can satisfy. But if we never able to sit down a moment in quiet, you know, people afraid of quietness. Many people I talk to, they feel afraid of quietness. Because they sit down and they many needs coming up. Constantly needs coming up. And they couldn't fulfill their needs. So they have to look for different things to go outside and, you know, party to replace that, to run away from that quietness. Even the many Vietnamese community, they come here. Sometimes I tell them, if you come here but you don't have a moment of quietness, you lost everything. Even though you work a lot, you contribute to the temple a lot, but there is no movement in your the time you come here, that you don't have any quietness, any a moment for you to sit down, then you lost. I have to tell them directly. Even though I know that, I really like that you have contributed to the temple a lot, you worked a lot for the temple, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is you come here, you find some stillness in your heart that can pay back whatever you've done. Otherwise, you cannot find peace. Otherwise, we all lost. We are lost. Even sometimes in our moment of meditation, still our mind still running many endless thoughts arriving in our mind. Even though you sit there, but nobody see you see yourself, whether you really still have a moment of that joyfulness in stillness or not, you know. But if you have that, you can run, you can be last long in the spiritual practice. But if you don't have that, you will change from one practice, one method to another, or maybe one religion to another. It doesn't matter you are Buddhist, whether you are Catholics, whether you choose or not. You have to have that in order to run, continue your spiritual life. Otherwise, you just pretend to ourselves. We play game with ourselves all the time. And we play game with each other, with ourselves and with each other all the time. So today I also want, when we play game, I connect my thoughts to the eighth one. They say falling apart or deteriorates of the five aggregates, the body. Can we play game with our body and with your partner? Today I went to a funeral. They called me at 1 o'clock in the morning. They call one call after another. I have to pick up the phone. Three calls constantly, one after another. I say her parents is dying in the hospital. And I say, now what can I do? You know, right now your mom already passed away. It's important is you have to calm down and recite the Buddha's name for your mom. And there's a tape so that they can play the chanting tape. So I asked them to play so that they can help the process of passing away of their parents, of her mother. So they called me back at 6 o'clock to arrange the schedule and everything. And they were hushed there, and then she's died and her husband was there. And he was there to look at her. He was afraid to look at her. And when her eyes, she died, but her eyes not closed. So I think her daughter told me that she asked him to come and, you know, to do, what is, what do you call? Close the eyelid. But he afraid. Mm. He afraid to come and do that, to close the eyelid. And he was standing outside, you know, on the door, afraid to come and enter into the room. So I asked myself, he was looking for her, you know, like tried to possess her when she was young, right? Yeah, we try to possess each other. Sometimes we fight for which different men and with different women to possess that that person, right? Mm-hmm. And we sometimes fall into suicide too, to possess one person. But you, what makes you try to possess that person when they was young? Okay? And now, you have to ask the question yourself, because you all have partner in one way or another. What makes you really want her or him when they was young? And now they are mature. Hmm? Mature. And now try to run away. Scared. Yeah, you scare him or her. Afraid to be getting close. You have to ask two questions here. What make you desire that person at the beginning when they were still energetic, right? Healthy. So what make you afraid to come too close to the moment of departure this life? Which what make you so afraid to come too close? To ask the question. Is that a true love or not? Or is that a true relationship or not? Because in a true relationship you have to support through your life. You have to support each other throughout your life. So other than that, you just want that physical body, right? That's a piece of meat or bone. That fulfills your desire. Right? That's what you want to desire to obtain at the moment, is the piece of meat or bones. Because you don't have the nature of, you don't see, able to see through. But now that peace missed upon is deteriorating, right? So you hate it. You be either hate it, or you resentful, or you don't like it. Now you create another cease, kind of cease to go to meet that person again in the next few life, you know, you're reborn again. Either you want it, or either you resent it, dislike it. The two oppositions. So when our body deteriorates, everyone has to deteriorate. Our body deteriorates. The five skanda is falling apart. And that moment is a lot of suffering. A lot of suffering. If you don't practice, you're not able to have a clear mind. Because the pain is overwhelming you. You have nothing uncontrollable. So if we don't practice to prepare ourselves when we was young, then we will suffer a lot when we die. The first thing is we regret about our life in our time in this life. Right? Yeah. Regret. And besides that, your body is so painful of deteriorating. Everything is deteriorating. But if anybody in that moment, that painful moment or suffering moment in the last moment of your life, if anybody come into your life and the person that you love but cannot approach you, how do you feel? How do you feel? You there, you are on the bed, unmovable, because he's paralyzed, right? Unmovable. But your mind still know, but your body is not functioning. The eyes you want to, the mouth you want to speak now, not able to, you know, utter a word. Your hand you want to move, not able to move. Feet, you want to walk, but you couldn't walk. How painful that is. Imagine that. Something that you want, you couldn't communicate. This lady, she wants something, she can communicate. The two things she can communicate is, if something that she likes, she just do like this. Something she don't like, she don't move. And you have to understand, otherwise, you have to understand, oh, if she's not like this? She say, okay, I like it. But if she don't like, she don't move, right? Or because she couldn't move. Whatever is, every moment of her movement is painful. That's so painful. Look at that. So the practice is to, when we able, if we are draw in the practice well, at that moment we're able to accept. Sometimes we couldn't accept our body like this because nothing is functioning now. The eye is one, you want to open your eye, but the eye couldn't open. Or either you want to close your eyes couldn't open. Even the hearing too. Everything is falling apart. So very painful. Painful. I go to feel, I see a lot of this thing happen. Every case, most of the case. Yeah. And another case in Broomfield, it's the same thing. You know, couldn't move. Most. But, so I see all this, and I ask myself many questions in my practice. Help me. Just help me motivate to me to practice more. So when you see this, this motivate you, is you're able to live your life fully every moment. You say this is, you value your life a lot. When, especially when you are healthy, you should know and use that healthy time to practice, to prepare all this. Prepare here don't mean you just prepare for the future, but you enjoy in that moment. Enjoy your life in that moment. Otherwise you regret later, I don't enjoy my life. Yeah, many, many cases that people that I encountered like that. They either regret about the children, you know, the children don't behave in accordance to what they want, the children no success. Their partner have left them, either man or woman left them. And all they live is with the regret moment. The whole life. All this moment come back, just like a video playing back to them. Imagine that if that moment nobody helped them in spiritual. Where can they go? They don't know where to go. Spiritual plan. Spiritual plan. Spiritual. And they can reborn into any kind of realms, animal realms. Hungry ghost realms. In the realm that you always angry, because at the moment you're so angry with everything, resentment with everything. You don't enjoy. So that's why the people. But that doesn't mean that you, we feel regret, we look at that and we take that as a lesson to learn. To learn what, ask ourselves, what can I do with my life while I'm alive? Still healthy. What can I do with my 2 feet? What can I do with my 2 hands? What can I, when I utter our words, what kind of word I utter out so that I can enjoy, but I can also help other people? So ask yourself kind of question. Life is full of questions. Sometimes we just live with in the realm of endless desire, and we never ask any our question about the spiritual life, something that that's meaningful for our life. We forget to ask that question. Insights begin with a question. When you begin, you have a question, then you, the insight is born in you. Inside you. So study the eight kind of suffering is for us to ask questions. Go back and ask ourselves questions. I born in this life, what can I do? What is the purpose I'm being here? That's why in Zen tradition we call Kunan. Kunan. You know? Kunan. That's why many spiritual people, they ask questions themselves. That's where I born in this life. Now I'm mature. What can I do? You contempt. Here is not like endless questioning or endless thinking, but you contempt. You ask the question and you contemplate about that question. Investigate into that question. But in order to investigate into the last question, you have to have a question, a moment of peace. So you ask, you investigate, and then you rest yourself. That's what we call vipassana meditations and samatha meditations. Vipassana meditation is inside meditation. The inside here is you ask question, right? And samatha is to rest. Rest. And then go back and ask again. So you investigate your life. into this kind of question. So question here.
Okay. So are you saying you meditate on a question you ask yourself?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You ask yourself. That's why. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's why the Buddha at the beginning, he asked himself these four questions. The birth, always sickness, and death. That's where he begins. And then he renounced his life as a prince's life. So he asked that question himself. So he started out with a question. The same thing as we start. We have to start out with a question. But it doesn't mean that we start out a question and we never endless question. You know, but there's time that for you to rest in peace. So that means the calmness, the concentration help you to look more deeply, to penetrate that question. Penetrate that question. Yeah, that's penetrating the question. So as a question about the five aggregates, you know, the five skanda, the five heaps in our body. And when we ask questions slowly, you find the answer for yourself. Nobody is going to answer you. You have to know that. Even myself, I cannot answer your question. The two questions to answer, you have to find within yourself. Then the doubt is released. The doubt is released. Sometimes that answer may fit you, but not fit you. Not fit me. Fit you, maybe not fit you. So when we study about this kind of age suffering, don't just let be passive, you know. The suffering is there, but we have to be active in our suffering. So that's why the Buddha says suffering, but doesn't mean that he saw us no way. There's a way out. So that's an active way out. So next time, if we have time, we will go into the cause. Now we just go into the result. This is the eight kind of suffering, is the result of suffering. And what we have done, we have planned some kind of cause here. So we have this kind of like birth, always sickness, and death, you know, love and disassociations, and dislike, dissatisfactions. We have planned the cause. So investigate into your suffering, you know. Don't let it run away, or don't be passive on suffering. Investigate. Without suffering, you will have no insight. The suffering helps us to generate our insight. So you have to experience the suffering. You know, without the suffering of hungry, you never taste the food, value the food. You never know how the food is taste like. Once we're hungry, and after that we eat, and we say, oh man, the food tastes so good, huh? Yeah, because of the suffering, help us to realize that. The same thing, suffering help us to, is the tool for us to generate our insights. And also, once we have the insight, we also have the compassion for our suffering. You know, suffering also needs the compassion. So we're able to have the compassion for ourselves. Because we are suffering and we know other people suffering, then we also have compassion. We know that the Buddha, in order for him to have compassion, because he is suffering, so he experienced that. So after he has insight, then he has the compassion for himself and for others. So don't reject the suffering, but contemplate on the suffering. Just really, suffering is like compost, you know. But have to, and one day suffering. For me, I experienced that without my suffering, for many, I will not be like myself today. I bet you. Without the loss of my mom, I might be different. I will not see the improvement. I will not advise you with other people's mom. I advise you that. So I don't blame my suffering. I took it as a lesson. Blame never go anywhere. It will cause more suffering. And blame will be endless. If you blame one thing, another thing will blame another thing. It's just like samsara. It's just like a circle. Just go around and around like that. And it's never end. So take when things happen in your life, Just take it, look deeply, and take it out and learn it out. This is my challenge, right? So when you pass that challenge, you become more strength, more stronger. More stronger. You're able to walk on your 2 feet. There's suffering. All life is suffering. But doesn't mean that life, there is no joy in life. There is joy in life. But there is momentary joy. There is everlasting joy. You know? It depends on you how to discover it, how to explore it. You have any question? Eloise?
When you talk about contemplate, how does that fit into meditation? Does it fit into sitting on the cushion and meditating?
Oh yeah, you sit and you have to contemplate, you know? And if you don't, if you sit there and you just let yourself do nothing, then you are very passive. And then you fall into sleepy, because your mind is not active. But active here doesn't mean that you run all the way around. You look into one mirror. And
the breath?
Uh-huh.
How does the breath?
The breath is a tool for to calm yourself down.
So
to go back.
Calm, and then we contemplate.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, you can contemplate. So the breath is like an anchor.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you got disturbed, disturbance, then you go back to your breath and just calm down. And just put whatever you contemplate, just, you know, stop, and then just go back to your breath and to calm yourself down. And that moment you into concentration. And then after you really draw in the breath, and you have some consciousness and go back into your subject. Because you continue, the more, if you too much contemplation, it still can be a very discursive too, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to know the limits there, you know. So that's why we have samatha and vipassana. Contemplate and rest, and contemplate and rest. In that way, you don't get tired. So if, for example, you just keep thinking all day, you run out of energy, right? So in the day, you have to rest, you know, really have your body and your mind rest. So that means you are in samatha, resting. So that's why in Buddhism, the samatha and vipassana are very important practice at the beginning. Doesn't, whether you go very deep into practice, you have to, that is the ground. That is the ground to go back all the time. And then you have to realize it for yourself. Sometimes we can say it's like mechanically or theoretically. We don't permeate, we don't penetrate that kind of teaching. But slowly, if you really pay attention, have some kind of mindfulness, you really, and you realize how much important that the vipassana and samatha practice is. Any other question? Because when you practice, slowly you discover some stickiness in yourself. Nobody know that. You know because you know who, which day you are and where you are. You know? I just talk, share in according to my experience. But you have your own, because everyone have our own experience of the practice. You know? A moment of quietness, a moment of disturbing, you know. You know it, you know, when everyone sits in cushion, we have 1,000 different thoughts for each person. Yeah. So just thinking about, you know, do a little bit contemplate in the 8 suffering that we study. The study here is too for us to contemplate. Doesn't mean that we have to be passive, depressed on this kind of suffering. It's just a tool for us to practice. Okay, so thank you very much for listening. So we will stop here and to have our meditations.